Namavavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 17, The Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in His Youth. Page 133. Mahaprabhu reminded Advaita about his previous activities of explaining devotional service in every passage of the Bhagavad Gita, fasting on not finding the devotional meaning of some verse. Seeing Mahaprabhu in his dream and receiving the actual meaning of that verse, an instruction to break his fast. The Lord then revealed the proper meaning of the Bhagavad Gita verse beginning Sarvata Pani Param Tat. Sri Advaitacharya, Chaitanya's covert disciple, said that it was Lord Chaitanya's greatness that he is Advaita's worshipable Lord. Those who deny the supremacy of Lord Chaitanya and serve Advaita, the incarnation of Mahavishnu, by considering him the independent Lord, are actually offenders at the feet of Advaita. Their fate will certainly be like that of the ten-headed Ravana. Those who consider Advaita the foremost Vaishnava and servant of Lord Chaitanya are actual devotees of Advaita and are qualified to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. This is Advaita's own statement.
Would that also go for Shiva worshippers?
Yes. Means the point is if you take them as supreme, if you see them as the top most devotee, then that will work fine.
Someone told me once that if you just have like the humble mood, then Lord Shiva will kind of pass on your worship to Krishna. Is that kind of a...
But what does that mean, humble mood? Because why would he pass it on if you're just humble? What? You know what I'm saying? If you look at it logically, humility, what does that do that's connected to Krishna?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? If you're just worshipping Shiva...
Yeah.
And you're in a humble mood, then that means he'll be pleased.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're thinking he's the supreme, then that's all the farther it goes.
Mm-hmm.
See, the point is, because everything is Krishna,
mm-hmm.
therefore whatever aspect that you're taking is important to you, you're absolute. You know, anamoy, then absolute means the senses. And so Krishna will reciprocate with you on that platform. But because he is the absolute, therefore, if you engage your senses appropriately, then you'll get a pious result. And you engage improperly, you'll get an impious result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same with if you see him as pranamoy. So therefore, justice and morality and economics are important to you.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you deal properly with these things, he'll reciprocate nicely. But on that platform, that material platform. And if you don't, you'll get a reaction. So the point is it is all Krishna, and since you have to follow all the rules anyway, even whatever platform you're on, then for that same effort, recognizing that it's Krishna that's there, then you advance in devotional service. You can go back to Godhead, you know. While otherwise, you're just getting that little bit. You know, it's like going to the billionaire and asking him for 2 rupees. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, you got 2 rupees, but for that same endeavor, you could have gotten more. So that's the whole thing, is there isn't something else. This idea is, well, there's this, and then there's, you know, there's always, well, there's devotional service, then there's material life. There's devotional service, then this. Or, you know, there is no such thing like that. That doesn't exist, because Krishna being everything, there isn't anything separate from Krishna. But the point is then when you're dealing with him in devotion, then it takes on that quality. You know, then he reciprocates on that platform, because that's the natural platform. If you have Bhagavan, you have all the other benefits of all the other platforms. But if you only deal with them in Dharma, Artha, Kama, or Moksha, then he'll reciprocate in those areas. But it's his rules. You know, so the modern thing where they're dealing in pranamoy, but it's all about however they feel and what they want to do, they don't get any good results. It's not that the community has gotten better and better. You know, now it's like each one has his own thing, you know, because if it's all we're supposed to be working together, then why is it that, you know, everybody's got to be called by a different nomenclature? You know what I'm saying? You know, before it was just Sir, Miss, Mrs., you know, or if you wanted to get into it, Sir or Ms., you know, okay, that's even simpler. You don't have to have Miss or Mrs., just Ms. Okay, great. But now you got to get into, you know, your potato-ness or, you know what I'm saying? You know, his divine carrot.
Yes.
You know, but maybe he's just the carrot top, not actually the carrot. You know, so...
I think that's one of those. Yeah, I think that's one of those.
Okay. His divine... You know, yeah, his divine carrot top. And he's not a redhead.
Well, the carrot top technically is green.
Yes, but somehow they call redheads carrot top.
Yeah.
Why? Because, like what you said, the top of the carrot is green.
Mysteries even science can't answer.
Yes. So... That's the difficulty, is that they're trying to do it, and in the name of community, it's everybody's trying to be so individual, and everyone's trying to be the center of the community, that there is no community at all. So even those who are functioning on that contemporary kind of liberal platform, they have very minimal things that are in common, you know? Because they're all, and if you're being liberal, you have to accept them all. You know? Or at the same time, is that everybody's got to be the same. Then you're not addressing individuality. So what's the difference between that liberal person and the whole, you know, 1984 thing? Right? And we have to remember the authorities that were the problem in 1984 were liberal. It means that they were just far left. So the difficulty comes down is that unless it's Krishna conscious, you don't actually even get the material stuff, because it is Krishna. This idea is that, well, there's the real life and then there's Krishna consciousness. That's total illusion. It means you do have to address, but that's in the Vedic system. You have varna and ashram. Of course you have to address. When they say real world, they mean money. So that means occupation. So the Vedic system doesn't have varna and ashram? You know, so it has. So then these things are just lack of understanding, lack of faith, lack of, you know, putting your effort into it, or, you know, just attachment, or, you know, it means a wide range of...
Hypocrisy.
Yes, of different,
yeah.
You know, how you say, non-tasty elements.
Yes.
You know. So the whole point is that's why the six schools, they're accepting the supremacy of the Lord, but their accepting of the absolute is not in the context of devotion. So it will be within the realm of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, and they're not saying anything beyond that. So they don't really understand. Like it said, it's vague, their understanding. So that's the thing, is that they will see things according to the laws, the metaphysics, and this and that. So they're in a better position because they're accepting the Vedic authority, and the Vedic authority comes from Krishna. And so Vaishnavas, then naturally, what they do, it always is according to the Shruti, Smriti, and Pancharatra. They don't do something else. If they're doing something else, making it up, it's not authorized. So how can one be confident that it'll be devotional service? Because it has to be pleasing to Krishna. Krishna gives the methods. We do our own thing. Oh, it's just feeling, but who's feeling? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, let's say, the guy's lactose intolerant, so then, you know, for his birthday, I make everything out of dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and why did you do that? I felt like it. I just felt it was, you know, dairy's the best. It was the real thing to do. You know, does that make it now all right? But according to the modern context, from his view, it's supposed to make it all right. you know, but from the personal relationship, it's not all right at all. So that's the difficulty, is that Krishna gives the direction. And we have to follow that. And if we make it up, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that you're not using your intelligence and you're not trying to be dynamic. That you do. But within the context of what you're working. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, you're having the, you know, what is it, Tour de France? That, yeah, that you're having, but it still has to have two wheels and not have a, you know, a rocket engine on it. You know, oh, I felt like putting a rocket engine, you know. I get so tired on those long straights, so I just put a rocket engine on there. You know?
Some are trying to do like that.
Yeah?
In a very small dimension, yes.
They put a rocket on
it. Means some engine to go quicker, yeah?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's allowed?
Yeah, no, it's not allowed. It's
but not still, allowed. They put it anyway. Yeah, yeah. Put it in the frame or something.
Yes.
Oh, that is so funny.
That's an idea.
Yeah. So the thing is it has to be within that. You can't bring your NASCAR car and say, you know, this year, yeah, you know, it's like a didn't work out in Indianapolis last year, so we thought we'd do Tour de France. You know, it's doesn't work like that.
Even if your NASCAR car identifies as a bicycle.
Ooh, now that's a tough one.
Then they should
have it. No, we have to.
But does the driver actually accept that?
Yeah, of course.
So if he accepts it, then can he be in,
as long as he's not doing steroids, of course.
Yeah, that's there. But does that mean now he can drive in Daytona?
Oh, no.
Because it's a bicycle.
Then he's, disqualified.
Yeah.
So he's got to pick one.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing.
We're getting two cars.
Yeah.
This is confusing.
Really?
Modern life is very confusing.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, is that this whole thing of that, because I feel like it, that's all right, but then everybody could just feel like it. I felt like taking your car.
Yeah.
I just needed a car, and I just felt that yours was the right one.
I identify as the owner of your car.
Yeah. Yeah, you could really... You know, send them going. It's like the devotees used to do. They come up, someone who start preaching Mayavad philosophy and they're doing book distribution. So he says, so it's all one.
Yeah.
Says, yeah. Says that there's no difference. So then give me your wallet. You know, it's all one. So if I have the money, you have the money, it's all the same. And you know, some would complain, but some would have to, you know, due to false egos, that have to accept it, you know.
Give a donation.
Yeah.
Clever.
Yeah. And it's always going to generally be a heftier donation because of the trouble they're causing. So, yeah. So the whole point here is it's a dvaita statement. We have to accept it. It's not that, well, I felt like this. And no, it's just a dvaita charya said like this. So in the same way as Shiva said like this. And then for devotional service, there are the standard methods. So there means you're given all the main aspects of it, and just like that, it'll work. And if you want to use some detail, then yes, but you still have to connect it back through the philosophy. You have to be able to show mechanically how it works. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu awarded desired benedictions to the assembled devotees. Up to this point, Mukunda was standing outside. When Srivas begged the Lord to bestow mercy on Mukunda, Mahaprabhu informed him that Mukunda was unqualified to receive his darshan because Mukunda associated with other sampradayas and shared the sentiments of those sampradayas. His mind and devotional service were unsteady. He was kada jatiya because sometimes he held a straw, kada, in his teeth, and sometimes he beat with a stick, jati. Okay. To deny the supremacy... Does that make sense? Because
yeah.
You put straw on your teeth means you're taking really the humble position.
Mm-hmm.
And then the jati means you're taking the stick and beating them. So the two don't go together, right? To deny the supremacy of devotional service is like beating the Lord's body with a stick. On hearing this, Mukunda resolved to give up his body on that very day and requested Srivas to ask Mahaprabhu whether he would ever get his darshan. When Mukunda was informed that he would get the Lord's darshan after 10 million lifetimes, he forgot himself in ecstasy and began to dance. Then Mahaprabhu called him by his side and forgave all his offenses. Accepting his own defeat, the Lord says, I eternally reside on the tongue of Mukunda. Thereafter, Mukunda condemned himself for being devoid of devotional service and narrated the glories of devotional service and the formidable consequences of non-devotional life by citing his own example. Feeling embarrassed on seeing the repentant mood of Mukunda, Vishwambhar glorified the supremacy of devotional service, declared that he is the only destroyer of one's fruit of bondage, resulting from the karmakanda mentioned in the Vedas, described the misfortune of the non-devotee washerman of Mathura, and then awarded Mukunda the benediction that he would sing for the Lord in all his incarnations. Yeah, good one. Although Mahaprabhu regularly manifested various pastimes at the house of Shivas, the unfortunate fruit of workers, mental speculators, and sense enjoyers who were devoid of devotional service did not get the opportunity to see those pastimes. Only Lord Chaitanya's servants were qualified by the influence of their devotional service to see those pastimes. The prime example was the servants and maidservants of Shivas. Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are eternal, and those who receive his mercy see them every day. By displaying his various forms according to the desires of his devotees, Mahaprabhu revealed that he is the source of all incarnations. Because he's avatari, not avatar. Like that. Mahaprabhu then distributed the remnants of his flower garland and chewed betel nuts to the devotees. Narayani, the niece of Shivas, received the last portion of the Lord's remnants. That is why Narayani is famous in Vaishnava society as, quote, the recipient of Mahaprabhu's remnants, end quote. Even though she was only a young girl, by the order of the Lord, she cried in ecstatic love for Krishna. Thereafter, the author concludes this chapter by singing the glories of Sriman Nityananda. When Gaurasunda forbade Nityananda from quarreling with anyone or creating any kind of restlessness at the house of Shivas, Nityananda put all the blame on Gaurasundara. When Gaurasundara informed Nityananda that he felt embarrassed by Nityananda's mischievous activities, Nityananda agreed to follow Gaura's instructions and then smiled as he immediately took off his cloth, tied it on his head, and jumped all around the courtyard. Mahaprabhu then grabbed Nityananda, who was devoid of external consciousness, and personally dressed him. Nityananda constantly remained in the mood of a child and did not eat rice with his own hands. So Malini personally fed Nityananda as her own son. One day, when a crow took a ghee bowl meant for Krishna's service from Srivasa's house, Malini began to cry in fear of harsh treatment from her husband. On seeing this, Nityananda solaced Malini and ordered the crow to return the ghee bowl. On Nityananda's order, the crow immediately brought the bowl and placed it before Malini. Seeing the influence of Nityananda, Malini fell unconscious to the ground out of ecstasy. Later on, when she offered prayers to Nityananda in various ways, Nityananda begged her for food while manifesting his childhood mood in order to conceal himself. Whenever Malini would see Nityananda, her milkless breasts would become filled with milk, which Nityananda would then drink. In order to increase the happiness of his mother, one day, Mahaprabhu sat next to Vishnu Priya Devi and accepted her service of offering betel nuts. At that time, Nityananda arrived in the courtyard of Mahaprabhu, completely devoid of external consciousness and without any clothes on. When Mahaprabhu repeatedly inquired as to the reason for his condition, Nityananda, being fully absorbed in ecstasy, simply gave contradictory answers. Finally, Mahaprabhu personally put clothes on Nityananda. Seeing the childish nature of Nityananda, Mother Sachi began to laugh. Mother Sachi considered Nityananda as non-different from Vishwarup, so she displayed the same affection for him that she displayed for Vishwambara. Thereafter, Nityananda asked for some foodstuffs, and Mother Sachi immediately brought 5 milk sweets for him. Nityananda, however, ate only one of those sweets and threw the other 4 sweets on the ground. Then, out of childish whim, he again asked for food. Sachi entered the house and found the 4 sweets that she had previously given him. When Mother Sachi took those sweets and was about to give them to Nityananda, she saw that Nityananda had picked up those sweets from the ground and was eating them. Okay. On seeing the influence of Nityananda, Mother Sachi considered him to be the Supreme Lord. When in a childish mood, Nityananda tried to touch the feet of Sachi, Sachi Devi immediately ran away. Although such unfathomable characteristics of Nityananda are the source of unlimited auspiciousness for pious people, they are the destroyer of the miscreants. Even Ganga Devi runs away from a sinful person who blasphemes Nityananda. The author constantly desires to hold the lotus feet of that Nityananda within the core of his heart. During the Navadvip pastimes, Nityananda Prabhu constantly remained absorbed in bliss and acted like a young boy. During the rainy season, everyone became frightened when he fearlessly swam in the crocodile-infested waters of the Ganges. Due to love of God, he sometimes remained in an unconscious state for 3 or 4 days. One day, Nityananda came naked before Sri Gaurasundar, in the mood of a child while loudly exclaiming, "Nimai Pandit is my lord." Mahaprabhu laughed and then took off the cloth from his own head and put it on Nityananda. Thereafter, the Lord smeared fragrant sandalwood pulp on the body of Nityananda, offered him a flower garland, and made him sit in front of him, and then began to offer him prayers. Nityananda accepted the service of Mahaprabhu and heard his own open glorification without any agitation. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu asked Nityananda for a kopan or Brahmin underwear. And after tearing into pieces that kopan, which is desired even by great mystic yogis, he distributed them to the devotees. The Lord instructed the devotees to tie those pieces of cloth on their heads and then describe Nityananda's constitutional position and the glories of his mercy. Being ordered by Mahaprabhu, everyone happily tied those pieces of kopan on their heads. When Mahaprabhu instructed the devotees to drink the water that had washed the feet of Nityananda, they immediately began to drink that water again and again. The devotees became intoxicated by drinking the water that had washed Nityananda's feet and considered that their lives had become successful. They praised their own good fortune and the sweetness of that water. Being agitated by love of God as a result of drinking the water from Nityananda's feet, they began to perform Krishna Kirtana in ecstasy. Gaura and Nityananda also joined them and performed kirtan throughout the day. After the completion of kirtan, Gaurasundara sat in the midst of the devotees and spontaneously declared, quote, "The lotus feet of Nityananda are worshipped by even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. So if one exhibits faith and devotion to those lotus feet, he actually exhibits faith and devotion to me. Anyone who is envious of Nityananda is not dear to me. Rather, simply by the touch of air that has touched the body of Nityananda, one attains the mercy of Krishna." The devotees chanted "Jai, Jai" in ecstasy and accepted those words from the mouth of Mahaprabhu with great respect. Since the pastimes of Sri Gaurasundara are perceived through eyes of love, ordinary people who are devoid of such love considered him simply as Nimai Pandit. Only fortunate souls saw his manifestations according to their respective qualifications. One day, Mahaprabhu instructed Nityananda and Haridas to go door to door and beg everyone to worship Krishna, chant Krishna's names, and practice Krishna's teachings, and at the end of the day to inform him of the results. Although everyone there at first laughed on hearing that they were to beg, Nityananda and Haridas took the instruction on their head and began to beg such alms from door to door. When householders respectfully invited the two sannyasis to accept alms, the two would, according to Mahaprabhu's instructions, beg them to chant Krishna's names, worship Krishna, and practice Krishna's teachings. And then they would leave. Although pious people were happy to see their wonderful method of begging alms and promised to follow their request, some people blasphemed Lord Chaitanya and considered the two to be madmen. Some people who were unable to enter Shivas Thakur's house during kirtan violently attacked the two and threatened them with royal punishment. But being empowered by Sri Chaitanya, Nityananda and Haridas did not pay the least attention to them. In other words, they fearlessly went on with their activities. One day the two Prabhus saw the most sinful drunkards, Jagai and Madhai. On seeing their pathetic condition, the hearts of Nityananda and Haridas, the most merciful deliverers of fallen souls, began to cry. Considering the two brothers as brilliant examples for Mahaprabhu's pastime in delivering fallen souls, they resolved to inform them of Mahaprabhu's most auspicious instructions, despite the potential dangers in doing so. Thus, they loudly requested them to worship Krishna. In spite of committing numerous sinful activities, Jagai and Madhai never had the opportunity of accumulating Vaishnava Apirad. So, as a result, the good fortune for achieving the mercy of Gaura Nityananda was awakened. Blasphemy of a Vaishnava is grave offense. It checks all piety and results in all degradation. Without the mercy of a Vaishnava, even Krishna's holy names, which are the best form of atonement, cannot nullify an offense committed against a Vaishnava. All the scriptures have warned everyone about boldly declaring this fact. On hearing the call of Nityananda and Haridas, the two rogues thought that their carefree life was being disturbed, so they chased after the two sannyasis. After the two prabhus ran away, they narrated the incident at the feet of Gaurasundara, who was sitting in the company of devotees and requested him to fulfill the meaning of his name Patita Pavana by delivering those sinners. When the assembled Vaishnavas realized that the two sinners have already been delivered by the merciful glance of Nityananda, they chanted the name of Hari in ecstasy. When Haridas Thakur described to Advaitacharya the various forms of Nityananda's restlessness and the difficulties that he had to experience as a result, Advaita glorified Nityananda on the pretext of criticizing him.
Those two have a special rasa.
Yes. Thereafter, Jagai and Madhai came and camped on the bank of the Ganges, where Mahaprabhu used to take bath. As a result, many people became frightened. On hearing the sound of Mahaprabhu's kirtan at night, the two drunkards thought it was in glorification of Mangala Chandi and danced wildly under the influence of intoxication. Later, when they saw Mahaprabhu, they praised his kirtan. When Nityananda Prabhu went before them one night with a desire to deliver them, Madhai hit him in the head. Jagai was distressed on seeing this, and he checked Madhai and chastised him for committing such a sinful act. On receiving the news, Mahaprabhu immediately went there with his associates. When he saw that Nityananda's body was covered with blood, he called Sudarshana in order to punish the two sinners, Jagai and Madhai. Jagai and Madhai saw Sudarshana Chakra with their own eyes. The most merciful Nityananda Prabhu informed the Lord that he had been protected by Jagai and begged the Lord to spare the two brothers. When Mahaprabhu heard that Jagai had protected Nityananda, he mercifully bestowed ecstatic love on him. On seeing Jagai's good fortune, the heart of Madhai also was transformed and he fell at the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu and begged forgiveness. Mahaprabhu, however, did not agree to bestow mercy on him. Rather, he instructed Madhai to take shelter at the feet of Nityananda and requested Nityananda to bestow mercy on Madhai. On the instruction of Sri Gaura, Madhai fell at the feet of Nityananda, who requested Mahaprabhu to bestow mercy on Madhai in exchange for all of his own piety. By the order of Mahaprabhu, Nityananda then tightly embraced Madhai and entered into his body. In this way, both Jagai and Madhai were delivered, and they began offering prayers to the two lords. Mahaprabhu then forbade them from committing sinful activities again. When they accepted this proposal, Mahaprabhu accepted the burden of their millions of lifetimes of sinful activities. After realizing the mercy of Mahaprabhu, Jagai and Madhai fell unconscious to the ground in ecstasy. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu had the two unconscious brothers brought to his own home, and after closing the doors from inside, he sat down in the association of the Vaishnavas. Due to transformations of ecstatic love, the two brothers began to roll on the ground. When, by the will of Gaurasundara, Shuddha Saraswati appeared on the tongues of the two brothers, they began offering meaningful prayers to Sri Sri Gaura Nityananda. As everyone there heard the drunkard's prayers to the Lord, they were struck with wonder and considered this the causeless mercy of the Lord. From that day on, Mahaprabhu included Jagai and Madhai among his own associates, and he personally begged all the Vaishnavas to forgive their offenses and bestow mercy upon them. After falling at the feet of all the devotees and receiving their blessings, Jagai and Madhai became free from all offenses. The sinful reactions were then deposited with those who blasphemy the Vaishnavas. Because sin goes somewhere. Right? And so then it goes to those who, like in here, those who blasphemy the Vaishnavas, like this. In the Vedic context, it goes those who oppose the Vedas. You know, so it goes somewhere. By the order of Mahaprabhu, all the devotees then began a huge kirtan, in which Mahaprabhu and the two brothers danced. At the end of the kirtan, everyone sat down, their bodies covered in dust, and Mahaprabhu declared that Jagai and Madhai were Mahabhagavatas. After ordering everyone to respect them as Mahabhagavatas, he warned that if anyone acted to the contrary or criticized the two, they would be ruined as a result of that Vaishnav aparad. Right, so you see, they had committed all the sinful activities, but they hadn't offended Vaishnavas. So that means they were still had the qualification that they could take up devotional service. Right, because it's offense to the Vaishnavas, that's what's actually going to block devotional service. All these other sins are not, that means they're not good in any way, shape, or form, and they're not useful. Right, and the impurity that they create is also going to be a disturbance, a distraction. But the point is it doesn't become directly an obstacle for devotional service. The Vaishnava aparad does. So you see, is that they hadn't committed any Vaishnava aparad. Lord Chaitanya is committing kirtan because they don't know any better. They thought it was Chandi kirtan, and so they danced in ecstasy to the kirtan. And then afterwards, they told Lord Chaitanya that it was nice kirtan. You know, it was, you know, so they appreciate it. So in this way, just there's that beginning aspect, and they got and that is there because they got the mercy of Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur. Right? So by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, then they were able to appreciate the kirtan and respect Lord Chaitanya. Right? Then after that, but they're still in ignorance. So then when Nityananda and Haridas went back, then they attacked them, and then this whole pastime there. But as said, Jagai tried to stop Madhai from doing anything, so then he got the mercy. And then but he didn't get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he had to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. You know, it's just like Durvasa Muni. He couldn't get the mercy of the Lord, he had to get the mercy of Ambarish Maharaj. Right? You know, so it's a standard thing. Is the associates of the Lord then are important. That's where rasa comes in. The whole spiritual world is about that interaction between the Lord and the devotees.
It's very surprising that Jagai transforms, and then immediately there is a transformation in Madhai too. That it is different.
Why wouldn't there be?
They are individuals, so why should they?
Why not? You never seen like one person in the family becomes a devotee, the whole family becomes a devotee? Yeah, you also have that. But the point is it's because Chaga and Mare, they do everything together. So then if one's going to become a Mahabhagavat, then the other one, hey, I'm going to do that also. What's the problem? They got the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Right? So it's not that by their material position that this is all happening. It's because of having gotten the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and having, you know, up to this point not committed any Vaishnava aparad, so therefore then they had the capacity that they could take it up. Because devotional service is the natural capacity of the soul. Right? It's not that it's something imposed on the soul. That's the natural. The conditioned state, that's the imposition. Yes?
These events seem to be very unique, even in the history of that time in the area, from drunkards to personal associates.
Yes.
So I was just thinking it must be very shocking for the whole community of Navadvip and everybody else hearing about these things.
Yes, yes. And so then there's going to be those who have faith, then they'll see us by the grace of the Lord and all that. And those who don't, then they're never going to understand. So, you know, Prabhupada previously was talking about, then you have all the devotees coming from around the world, you know, coming to India and that and practicing all these things. And so those who, you know, have the proper attitude, they appreciate that. And then there's always those that say, no, unless you're born in a, you know, Hindu family or this or that, then, you know, like that. You're always going to get this. So it's part of the options of consciousness in the material world. It's set in certain patterns. So people think, oh, it's all so different, we're doing something so different, but they're not doing anything. You know, it's just like everybody doing some, you know, contemporary art, each one thinks he's doing something different, and you look at them, they all look the same. You know, a good example also is like the architecture in San Francisco. You know, it's all exactly the same. Like, you know, you see the houses, they're all trying to do something unique, and they're all the same. A block, with, you know, put with a few things sticking out over the windows, because no one wants to use the sunshades because, you know, that's old and archaic and all that. So, you know, like that. And so if you look around, the only buildings that are unique are the ones with the sunshades. Does that make sense? You know, it's just, so that's the difficulty, is they're always trying to do something different. Remember when I was once in, what was that called? Well, I don't remember the magazine. That's a good thing. So, oh.
Congratulations.
Oh, wait. Oh,
oh. So close.
No, it's not quite something. Oh, Harvard Lampoon.
Oh, right.
Was it Harvard Lampoon?
No.
Harper.
No,
there's a Harvard Lampoon.
Okay.
I don't know if it's still running. It may be something else. But whatever it is, you had, you know, this hippie walking. You know, the black blues, you know, the dark what do you call it, you know, the work boots and then the flared jeans, you know, like that, and then the black long kind of thing, the black coat like that, and then the big beard and long hair, and then the big black felt hat, you know, and the round sunglasses, and, you know, very typical, you know, up to date, you know the hippie look, right? And so he's walking along. When they walk, also they're kind of leaning back and their feet are out more. You know, I think the subtitle is "Keep on Trucking." How they don't fall over backwards, I'm not sure, but, you know, like that. So he's walking along, and he's the individual, and he's the man. And then it shows in the next frame, there's a guy dressed exactly the same coming the other way. And then they bump into each other, and they don't know what to do because they're supposed to be individual, but they're exactly the same, and like that. So it was a goof on... You're trying to be different, but everybody's the same.
There's a recently, I think now today it's the hipsters, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
The same thing. So there was a guy who sued a magazine for bringing a picture of him without his approval. Found out it wasn't him.
Awesome.
Because he was so unique.
Exactly. Yes, it's always, it's the same things. There's a few variations, but that's about it, you know. So today you wear this, and the other guy wears what you were wearing yesterday, you know. So, did we get anywhere? We just got off on a tangent. Ended up.
Repeating everything, whatever was there at that time, how they saw that.
Oh, yes, so it's always the same. The material world's always exactly the same. This idea that we're different, we're now, you know, we're modern, we're this, we got the technology, it's all the same stuff. It never changes like that, you know, because they're looking at it in a very microscopic kind of way, but these things, it's always goes. Every 4,300,000 years, there's Kali Yuga. And what are they going to do in Kali Yuga? It's all the same thing, you know. Does that make sense? You know, this time he's Colonel Sanders, next time he'll be Sergeant Sanders, next time he'll be Uncle Sanders. You know, it's going to be the same thing. Does that make sense? It's never going to be the change. You know, this time it was the Beatles. Next time it will be the cockroaches. You know, whatever it is, it'll all go on. You know, so it's the same modes. The modes come, and when the modes go through that particular combination, then all these things become interesting. How else do you get the 8,400,000 species? So the modes are only going to present things that are attractive to those species. And that's all. So that's the thing. Is that it's there and you wonder, where does this all come from? It's because the species, you know. So what was it? I think I mentioned some years back, I saw Bennington, you know, commercial. And you have this guy there. I'm not sure. Yeah, some kind of, you know, had some kind of, what do you call it? You know, a little bit of ethnicity there, something like that. You know, as if honky's not an ethnicity, but that's just taken as normal. And then everything else is like this. So he was there, and it was a side, from the side. And, you know, it's one of those where, you know, the hair is all you know, like shaved on the sides, you know? And then on the top, you know, he has there. But it was short, but it was made so it was standing up. And it was kind of, you know, that kind of funny orangey, like kind of light orange, kind of brown, yellow. You know that it's a standard kind of color they use. And, but, you know, it was done very nicely. So you could say from a general thing, it was very well done, the colors and all that kind of thing. Because that's the whole idea of their ad, is all the different colors. And then what was interesting, because he had maybe it was more like an Ethiopian kind of move. Because he had one of those real, like, pointy, you know, long, big, pointy noses. You know, not the curved or not the, you know, like ski jump kind of look or anything like that. You know, it's a very, you know, really, you know, authentic Roman nose kind of thing. But he had a silver nose pin. And from the side, you looked at it, the guy looked exactly like a bird. You know how birds have, you know, they have the nose and they have the hole in their beak, that's where they breathe through, and then they'll have the, you know, everything on their head is flat, except on the very top they have that little poof sticking out, you know? Like that. And the guy is just, you know, so that's the thing. All these things, it comes up, it's a fashion, but it's bird fashion. You know, in the 80s, the ladies with the, you know, the mane and all that, you know, that was the how you saw it? Mammals fashion. You know, that goes through a thing, you know, all the mammal colors. And then they get it. It's very big. The bug colors, you know, all the different, you know, the coats, and that's all different things. You know, it's just, doesn't make sense where the colors are and how it's cut and that, and it's called these bright fluorescents. Bugs are like that. I mean, it's literally.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah. It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. So I always got, you know, so you have a wheel in the front and a wheel in the back. Those are the legs, right? And then you got your legs. Mm-hmm. So six, you know, so you have the legs in the front, the legs in the middle, and the legs in the back. Technically, that's called a bug. You know, and they wear hard, you know, shiny, you know, how you say, coverings, and, you know, the helmet, and, you know, and then they fly around, you know. Most of them keep their legs up, but then the guys on the choppers, they put them right out. And you see wasps, when they fly, they're right out. And if you bother them, they will sting. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just, you get all these things, it's just the modes go. Does that make sense? And so this idea that it's new and fresh and different, it's just been, you know, 4 million years. So therefore, it seems like it's new and fresh, but, you know, it's not. You know what I'm saying? Because you have the opportunity. Because in 4 million years, you have the time that you can go down, go to hell, go through all the different things, get tossed off the mountain and, you know, cut to shreds and, you know, sewn up in little pieces. And whatever it is that they're going to do to you, go through all the animal species of life that is specifically for your particular karma and all that, and land up right back where you started in Kali Yuga.
Get your old job back.
Yeah, get your old job back, same boss, you know, same family, same crazy kids.
Where have you been? Yeah. Don't ask.
Yeah, and so everything's got to be the same. You know, music will be the same, the clothes will be the same, the attitude will be the same, the whole thing will be the same. Because you're always put back where you do something wrong, you're punished, and you're put back right where you were. Otherwise, how do you tell if you've changed? You know, and then who changes? So run back again. And so, you know, hundreds of thousands of times of that, then the guy might think, well, maybe this time I won't do that. You know?
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay, and then a few more than Mule Thousand, then he does it, right?
You know? Definitely not doing that.
You know, so that's just how it is. So this idea that we're different and unique and this, the material world's so different, and how do we follow all this Vedic, you know, that's so unaware, so uninformed. It's Krishna's world, it's Krishna's laws that always works in the same way. That's why you can always follow the Vedic, but to follow something regional, that you can only do at a certain time. Yeah, time and place. It only works there. You know, it's like you strut around like you do in L.A. You can't do that in New York. It just doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. It says everything is limited. Everything is that. But the Vedic is not. And that is just because it's within the world. If you want to get out of the world, then you have to follow the Vedic in the context of pleasing Krishna as devotional service. That will take you out. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good. Thereafter, Shishi Mahaprabhu took everyone to the Ganges, wherein they all freely engaged in tumultuous water sports. In those water sports, everyone was defeated by Mahaprabhu. In the water sports between Shishi Advaita and Nityananda, Advaita Prabhu glorified Nityananda on the pretext of criticizing him and revealed that he himself was Lord Vishnu. At the end of the water sports, Mahaprabhu gave his own flower garland, prasad, to Jagai and Madhai and sent everyone to eat lunch. During this period, the demigods would daily come to see Chaitanya's pastimes and offer various services, but no one other than the Lord recognized them. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Question about opera. Are you with that? For example, when we say that, usually when people go by and they go for devotees, we say that they get Agyata Sukriti.
If they're chanting the holy name.
Yeah.
But if they're going, you know, ooh, those idiots, you know.
They say, for example, Hare Krishna, are those idiots or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, but they're saying Hare Krishna.
So they get Agyata Sukriti and no opera?
They're getting Agyata Sukriti for chanting. The criticism, then that's not ideal.
Because sometimes we also go from the devotees. Sometimes we
have... Yeah, that's why you have to be careful. It's not so good. Means if it's in a friendly mood and all that. But you see here is... Advaitacharya is criticizing him, and the pretext of criticizing is glorifying. So that's the actual, you know, you could say, shuddha-sattvic way of fault finding. You're taking something that's a glory and presenting it as if it's not, though it is. Like that. But that may take some practice. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just,
we have good role models.
Yes, yes.
Both parties have to understand that that's what's going on.
Yes.
Because otherwise, the offense is taken.
Yeah, no, it's there. Yeah, because you always have to be careful. That's why the aspect of retribution and justice and all these things, they get in the way. Because we're thinking that the law is the important thing when it's the devotion is the main thing. It doesn't mean the laws aren't followed. It just means that there's a problem in the law, then that can be rectified and you just continue on with the devotion. But we think because the law has been broken, therefore bhakti can't progress. So, you know, that's it. Everything has to stop. That they're not really understanding the glories of bhakti. You know, like that. Like that. That's why Jagai and Madhai are given as the example. Because otherwise, then we'll take it, you know, eternal damnation is extremely popular. And so then you see with Jagai and Madhai, and it's like, you know, like that. Means whatever you see in the Western concept of how guy's bad, that they haven't met Jagai Madhai. Yeah, so the demigods would daily come down and take part and serve the Lord. But other than the Lord, no one would recognize that these are the demigods. The demigods headed by Brahma and Shiva would daily come to Mahaprabhu's house, and after secretly performing various services and observing the Lord's daily pastimes, would return home. On seeing the deliverance of the two great sinners, the demigods were astonished as they realized the unlimited glories of Mahaprabhu. They felt particularly joyful by maintaining in their hearts the hope that by the mercy of Gaurasundara, they would also be delivered. When Yamaraj inquired from Chitragupta about the extent of Jagai and Madai's sins and how these sins were totally destroyed, Chitragupta said that the two had performed so many sinful activities that if 100,000 scribes narrated them for 1 month, and if Yamaraj heard them with 100,000 ears, they would not reach the end. His scribes were incapable of recording their sinful activities, which they continually heard from the mouths of the Yamadutas. Yet the Yamadutas are just coming and telling them all to stop. And so they can't even write it down. There's so much. They were particularly unhappy to think about how the two would tolerate the painful punishment resulting from their unlimited sinful activities. But by the boundless mercy of Mahaprabhu, all their sinful reactions were destroyed within a moment. After hearing the description of the deliverance of Jagai and Madhai from the mouth of Chitragupta, Yamaraj fell unconscious in his chariot due to love of Krishna, and his subordinates, headed by Chitragupta, began to cry out. As the demigods and sages, headed by Brahma, Shiva, and Narada, passed by, singing the glories of Mahaprabhu's unlimited mercy, and the topics of the two demons' deliverance, they saw Yamaraj lying unconscious in his chariot. When they inquired about the reason for this, Chitragupta related the entire incident to them. On realizing that Yamaraj was absorbed in love for Krishna, the demigods chanted Krishna's names in his ear, and the son of Surya regained his external consciousness. Thereafter, in ecstatic love, Yamaraj and the demigods danced and sang the glories of Mahaprabhu's unlimited mercy and the topics of Jagai and Madhai's deliverance, and prayed to Mahaprabhu that they may be delivered like Jagai and Madhai. By the mercy of Mahaprabhu, Jagai and Madhai would every morning take bath in the Ganges and then chant 200,000 holy names of Krishna. While remembering their previous sinful activities, they would repent and chant the names of Gaura as they cried loudly. Even though Mahaprabhu and his associates constantly bestowed mercy and solaced Jagai and Madhai, they could not become peaceful. Remembering his grave offense of drawing blood from the body of Nityananda, Madhai especially always condemned himself and lamented. One day, taking a straw between his teeth, Madhai grabbed Nityananda's lotus feet in a solitary place, with tears in his eye, begged forgiveness for his offenses by offering him various meaningful prayers. After hearing Madhai's heart-rending prayers, Nityananda solaced and embraced him. When Madhai then expressed to Nityananda his desire to become free from the offense of causing trouble to numerous living entities, Nityananda Prabhu instructed Madhai to build a bathing ghat on the bank of the Ganges and offer respectful obeisances to those who came to take bath in the Ganges. Following the order of Nityananda, Madhai daily cleansed the bathing ghat while chanting the names of Krishna with tears in his eyes. He would offer obeisances to those who came there for bath and begged forgiveness for his offenses. Upon seeing this behavior of Madhai, people were astonished. On seeing Jagai and Madhai's drastic change of heart, even those who had previously blasphemed and ridiculed Mahaprabhu because of not understanding his position now also realized Mahaprabhu's unlimited mercy and glories. Due to the performance of severe austerities, Madhai became renowned as Brahmachari. The evidence that Madhai built a bathing ghat on the bank of the Ganges is that even today the name Madhira Ghat is heard. Right? So just when you go up the road where it then makes the major turn, and there's that little culvert. Then there's a road there. If you go in that a little bit, then you'll have Madhair Ghat.
It is not close to Ganga now.
No, Ganga's moved, yeah. Because the Ganga, basically where this road is, it used to flow straight up this road. So then Yogpit would have been right on the Ganga. So that's where it was moving before. And so then that just goes, you know, it goes straight up. Then it's moved over. And so, you know, she changes like that. At one point, it means, you know, even, you know, so it's some, like, I think in the 1800s, the Ganga was up, you know, like where the Gurukul is. mm-hmm. that side. Mm-hmm. So from where it is now, come way in. That's why this whole area is just sand.
Hmm.
Like so it moves around a lot. That's her last time. Sorry?
Jalangi was there?
Yeah, Jalangi is always there. It shouldn't be there. You don't want it to be there.
Yeah, maybe the time when the strand broke, I'm going to the Chantaji house.
Right.
All of them.
Yeah, but you still have islands. It's Navadweep, means the nine islands. Because you have, like, Alakananda was there, some of the others. Like, sometimes you see it a bit, is there. But before they were all, it was all there. There were, like, you see the map, and it shows where all the rivers were. So it's just a matter of if it's, you know, whether it's prakat or aprakat. So yeah.
Every night, Mahaprabhu and his devotees perform kirtan at the house of Shivas after closing the doors from inside. Right, because closing the doors from inside means you lock it so that it can't be opened. Right. With a desire to see the Lord's kirtan pastimes, the less fortunate mother-in-law of Shrivas one day hid herself in the corner of the kirtan hall. Mahaprabhu, who is the supersoul of everyone, understood this and repeatedly declared that he was not getting any happiness in the course of dancing that night. As a result, Shrivas and the devotees became frightened and worried, so they checked whether there were any outsiders within the kirtan hall. Finding his mother-in-law hidden in one corner, Shrivas Pandit had her grabbed by the hair and thrown out. Because it means it's his house. She doesn't just, you know, she's come in at this time, and it's only certain people who are there, and she's come and hid herself there, so.
Nothing to do specifically with the mother-in-law.
It's an eternal principle. We were just talking about certain principles that are always there.
Thereafter, Mahaprabhu felt blissful and again began to dance with the devotees. No one is eligible to see such pastimes without the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Because there was just an interest.
Right? There's just a desire and interest, so it's not actually devotion. They just want to see what's going on. Like that. But the point is it's about rasa. It's not that you see what's going on. You know, it's like you're sitting there trying to eat and everyone's coming up with cameras and taking pictures and this, you know, it ruins the mood.
Like every weekend here.
Hmm?
Every weekend here.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one is eligible to see such pastimes without the mercy of Mahaprabhu. So it's not just I feel like it. It actually has to be a devotional position. So that's the whole thing. This whole thing is just means that you desire to come to that platform, you desire to be qualified for that platform. But just because you desire, therefore that's your right, that's not reality. When Mahaprabhu climbed on the throne of Vishnu in the mood of the Supreme Lord and after placing his lotus feet on everyone's head, addressed Advaita as servant, Advaita became extremely pleased. But in the next moment, when Gaurasundara, the personification of inconceivable pastimes, concealed his mood as the Supreme Lord and tried to take the dust from the feet of the Vaishnavas in the mood of a servant, all the Vaishnavas felt extremely distressed in their hearts. Advaitacharya did not love anything other than the service of Sri Chaitanya. But Mahaprabhu considered Advaitacharya as worshipable and tried to grab his lotus feet. For this reason, Advaitacharya felt pain in his mind. And when Mahaprabhu fell unconscious due to love of God, he would approach the Lord's lotus feet and fulfill his own desires by offering obeisances at the Lord's lotus feet, washing the Lord's feet with tears, smearing the dust of the Lord's feet upon his own head, and worshipping the Lord with various ingredients. One day when Mahaprabhu fell unconscious while dancing, Advaitacharya took the opportunity to smear the dust from Mahaprabhu's feet over his entire body. After a while, the Lord regained his external consciousness and then began to dance. He then expressed his dissatisfaction to the devotees and inquired whether anyone had taken dust from his feet. When everyone remained silent out of fear of Advaitacharya, Advaitacharya admitted with folded hands that he stole the dust from Gaurasundara's lotus feet and begged the Lord's forgiveness for his fault. So even there, it means he being in the position he is, he's taken that opportunity, but it doesn't mean because you want, it's your right. This whole thing about everybody works on it's my right or I have rights. Okay, great, you know, but what about obligations? What about the proper moods? What about the service attitude? What about those things? Does that make sense? So there's the balance. So we see from here is that it's there and Advaitacharya is in the position, but at the same time there is an etiquette like that. So therefore, we won't imitate Advaitacharya. That's the point. Upon hearing the words of Advaita, Mahaprabhu externally displayed anger, and on the pretext of criticizing Advaita, glorified him in various ways. The Lord then took the dust from Advaita's feet and placed Advaita's feet on his own chest. Thereafter, when Advaita Prabhu revealed the glories of Gaurasundara by glorifying how the Lord always tries to increase the prestige of his servants, Mahaprabhu also began to praise the glories of Advaita. The Vaishnavas are struck with wonder on realizing the topic of Gaurasundara's unlimited mercy on Sri Advaita. Then Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, Advaitacharya, and the other devotees began to dance and glorify the Lord with ecstasy. Although Nityananda Prabhu would become overwhelmed in the ecstasy of kirtan, he was always alert. Whenever he saw that Sri Chaitanya Chandra was about to fall unconscious due to love of God, he stretched out his arms and caught him. But so if he's on his own, then he's doing whatever he likes. But if Lord Chaitanya is there, then he's very conscious. In Navadvip, there lived a poor Brahmin named Shuklambara, who was attached to the devotional service of Vishnu. He offered Krishna whatever he collected by begging and maintained his life with the remnants. Yet, since he was day and night engaged in singing the glories of Krishna, he did not feel any distress due to poverty. Materialistic people considered him a beggar, because no one other than a recipient of Lord Chaitanya's mercy can recognize his servant. One day as Mahaprabhu was sitting in the mood of the Supreme Lord, Shuklambara came there with a begging bowl on his shoulder and began to dance in ecstatic love for Krishna. When Mahaprabhu saw Shuklambara, he took a handful of rice from his bag and began to chew it while revealing the qualities of Shuklambara. It means he took a handful of rice from Shuklambara's bag, not from his own bag. So I was thinking, why does Mahaprabhu have a bag? No, he's taking it from Shuklambara's bag. When Shuklambara expressed fear of his own ruination on seeing Mahaprabhu eat that broken, inferior quality rice, right, because the broken, inferior, it means it's called kud. When you husk the rice, then some of it gets broken. So then when they put it in the winnowing basket and deal with it, then they get all the whole rice, and what's left is all the broken rice. And so then that would be used for kichuri or different things like that, or that's, you know, then they would give it to the beggars or different things like that. You know, you put it in for food for the cows. You know, so it's always used, but that's generally what they're going to be getting. Like that. If someone invites the Brahmin to his house, they'll then use the proper rice. But, yeah. Mahaprabhu informed Shuklambara that he always eats with love the foods offered by his devotees and never even looks at the food offered by non-devotees. Seeing Gaurasundara's mercy on Shuklambara, all the devotees happily engaged in Krishna Kirtana. After glorifying Shuklambara's various qualities, Mahaprabhu awarded him the benediction of ecstatic love of God. When Shuklambara received this benediction, all the Vaishnavas chanted the name of Hari in ecstasy.
So now it seems that at the end of every pastime is always kirtan.
Yes, that's the whole point. because you're glorifying Krishna, it's always about Krishna. And so that's what's going on in the spiritual world. It's always about the glorification of Krishna, discussions about Krishna and that. So since this is the process in this age, so then that becomes the prominence. So they're either sitting down and discussing about the glories of the Lord, or they're singing the glories of the Lord. So it's either discussion or singing, right? And then you have taking a shot. So Prabhupada said, chanting, dancing, taking a shot, that's our process. You know, and then to do that on a grand scale and to allow so that everybody can take part, that takes some organization. You know, and that organization takes money and this and that. So, but all that's just so that everybody can chant, dance, and take the shot. So we should always remember that's what it's about. I don't know it. Anybody knows? Shukambara Brahmachari is who?
Sudama Vipra.
Sudama Vipra?
I don't know.
Haven't heard. In Archana Marg, the path of deity worship, it is customary to offer foodstuffs to the Lord under certain rules and regulations. Although Shukambara did not offer food in that way to the Lord, Mahaprabhu forcibly ate Shukambara's rice and exhibited the superiority of the path of rag, spontaneous attachment, over the path of archana. Being proud of high birth and other opulences, persons who are blind to the material pride cannot recognize the Vaishnavas. Rather, they blaspheme or tease them, considering them poor and foolish. That is why the Supreme Lord, who is affectionate to his devotees, does not accept worship, wealth, etc., from those who offend the Vaishnavas. Right, so that's not what's important to the Lord. What you have to remember is that you have the system that's going on here in the material world. And it emanating from the Lord is complete in itself. Right? Not satisfying, but complete. It just keeps going on. And so you have its own, you know, socioeconomic process going on. Then, if you want to, you know, and so being involved in that, then we see that there's no real satisfaction. Right? And so then, by the grace of the Vaishnavas, then you hear about this spiritual platform, this pastimes of the Lord. So then, it has to be that that's the major thing, and you're trying to absorb yourself in that side. Right? And absorbing yourself in that side, then that's what's going to, then you don't need to be involved in here. Right? You know, whatever is needed to maintain one's life in a simple way, then that can be done. Does that make sense? You know, that's all that's done.
Huh?
Oh, okay. I mean, they can all come in. Yeah. No, sometimes the kids come.
Shukambara Brahmachari is one of the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas during Krishna's pastime. So, no.
No. So it's not that because he ate some handful of whatever he had that that makes him nuts.
Good guess.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Like, you know, Shukambara, Sudama, like that. Bag, rice, he's a Brahmin. Like that. Yeah. No. Close, but not quite. No, you won't even look at it. Why would you want to look at it? The smarta Brahmins, then they worship, they're worshiping the absolute in, you know, within these five kind of aspects. Right, so they're worshiping as Vishnu, they're worshiping as Shiva, as worshiping as Devi, as Surya, and as Ganesh. So it's Panchopasana. And so in there, then you have those that just worship whatever. It's the season for Vishnu, you do that. It's the Shiva things, you do for Shiva. It's the sun, you do for that. Ganesh, so they all have their times, and so they
season.
Just...
Huh? Season? It's like vegetables or something?
Yeah, you know, it's like just as... Tis the season to be jolly, right? You know, so there's a season for it, you know, and then now it disappears and everybody figures out they got to make some more money, you know, and then when Easter comes up, then it'll be the season again, and then.
They worship somebody
all of them together all the time?
No, no, I'm just saying there's those who is going to be about the certain time, like when it's, what do you call it? When it's, Diwali, then that's, that's Ram, and then it's Janmashtami, that'll be Krishna, and then when it's Ganesh Chaturthi, it'll be that, when it's Shiva Ratri, then they worship Shiva, like that. So they're going to have the aspect that they're worshiping all these five at their different times. But then you may have within those who they focus on a particular one and take them as the absolute. So then those ones will be Shaivites, or the ones that worship Vishnu will be Vaishnavas, like that, or Suryas, or Ganapatyas, or Shaktas, right? But it's not that they don't do the other festivals also. Does that make sense? So you're going to have, in that, they're going to be at some point offering things to Krishna. And technically, even they're worshipping the demigods, if they're following properly, they have to do, they have to worship Shaligram first, because they're Brahmins. And then the remnants from that, that's what's offered to the demigod. But he's, as he's pointing out, Krishna doesn't accept their offerings. Right? But they're going through the rituals and all that, so if they do get the mercy of Vaishnavas, then they'll understand, and then they'll just continue doing the same thing. You understand? Because it's the same process. At least that, yeah. It is confirmed in all scriptures that Krishna alone is the life and wealth of the Akinchanas, those who have no material assets. Right? So you just see everything in context of Krishna. So someone may have more things that he's dealing with in engaging in Krishna's service, and someone less. So unless there's some obligation or need to have more, then the Vaishnavas will always have less. You just keep whatever minimally, whatever actually works. Right? So the materialists don't understand that because they're trying to get more and more, because the idea is the more you have, the more you can enjoy, though they don't enjoy it because there's more and they have to take care of it and it costs more and they have to work harder. But whatever, there's the idea that it'll be better.
Any day now.
Huh? Any day now, yes. Any day now.
The pursuit of happiness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's it. The pursuit of it. Yeah, it doesn't say be happy.
No,
it just says the pursuit
for
of happiness. Yeah, that's interesting. That's actually quite smart. When Mahaprabhu wandered throughout Navadvip, everyone saw him as Cupid personified. The ordinary people saw him as full of pride, right? Because he's confident. He is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And after seeing his strength of learning, the atheists were frightened. Although the Bhattacharyas proudly declared themselves as teachers for awarding knowledge, Mahaprabhu did not consider them as equal to the straw in the street. Right, the straw in the street at least is useful. It's a little muddy or wet. You put down the straw, you can walk on it, you get some benefit for it. You throw it in the street, the goats can eat it. Something is useful there. But he's considered that the Bhattacharyas, they're not even equal to that. It's useless. Right? Because Bhattacharya means that they're the top of the Brahmins, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but also it's a standard thing in India. Like in South, you see it a lot more. You don't see it means as much here. It means now it's become, what is it? I think Bandopadhyay. And then how is that shortened to?
Banerjee.
Banerjee probably originally was Bhattacharya, but now it's Banerjee. Like that. Bhatta, yeah. Yeah, but it's the same, it's just short for Bhattacharya. So then, or even who's the Acharya among the Bhattas. So you have all these levels. Because even if it's just a standard thing, like in Sada, you have the Brahmins, you have four different classes, four different levels. So they're all Brahmins, they're all respected, but there's ones that are more and more high, like that, depending on the Gotra or different things like this or that. Yeah. When Gaurasundara wandered about the city of Navadvip with his devotees, he kept his identity covered. It's only devotees could understand. People just had different ways of looking at him. Being defeated by the keen intelligence of the Lord, the atheists secretly began to conspire against him. Right, because means if you're not agreeing with the point of the position of the personality of Godhead, that means it's atheistic. Because theism means the personality of Godhead then is supreme, and he has the features of Brahman and Paramatma. Right, he's the creator of everything. He has all energies. You know, he's source of all energies. He's control of these energies. Like, you know, so these kind of things, they're technically atheists. Though they may accept the Vedic version, that's the perfection of the Vedic culture, is even atheists can appreciate it, because it just works better. Right? Yeah. They complained to the local administration against Mahaprabhu. During the course of Mahaprabhu's traveling throughout the city, the atheists indirectly informed the Lord about the arrival of the local administrator. Mahaprabhu replied to them that he had studied all the scriptures at an early age. But no one challenged him because he was only a boy. Therefore, he also has the desire to meet the royal administrator in order to proclaim his self-prestige. After returning home, Mahaprabhu expressed to the devotees his unhappiness due to conversing with the atheists. In order to remove that unhappiness, the Lord began to dance and chant with his associates. Then, when in the course of kirtan, the Lord repeatedly declared that he was not feeling any ecstasy, Dvaitacharya Prabhu, who was intoxicated by love for Sri Chaitanya, informed the Lord that since he had appointed Nityananda as the storekeeper of ecstatic love, and since he had distributed the love of God to even gardeners while deceiving Advaita and Srivas, Advaita Prabhu was absorbed in what has absorbed all his love. Being maddened with love of God, Advaitacharya spoke in this way and then began to dance joyfully. After hearing the words of Advaita, Gaurasundara declared that it is useless to maintain a body that is devoid of love of God. Thus, with the desire to give up his body, he jumped into the Ganges. Nityananda and Haridas, however, pulled the Lord out of the Ganges. With a desire to remain hidden, Mahaprabhu forbade Nityananda and Haridas from disclosing this news to anyone, and personally went to stay in the house of Nanda and Acharya. According to Mahaprabhu's order, Nityananda and Haridas did not disclose this news to anyone.
Nanda and Acharya seems like a very trustworthy fellow. That's where everybody always
goes. Yeah, always goes there when you want to.
So if you don't want anybody to know anything, you go to his house.
Yeah, yes, yes. When devotees could not find the Lord, they began to cry out of separation. Being afflicted with intense feelings of separation from Mahaprabhu, Advaita Prabhu also remained without any food or water. When Mahaprabhu arrived at the house of Nanda and Acharya and sat down on the throne of Vishnu, Nanda and Acharya offered his respectful obeisances to Mahaprabhu and engaged with love in his service. Thereafter, Mahaprabhu told Nanda and Acharya to keep his arrival a secret. Nanda and Acharya informed the Lord that even though he lives in the hearts of the living entities, the Supersoul, and hides himself in the ocean of milk in the form of Kiradakshai Vishnu, the devotees find him in the innermost regions and reveal him before the people of the world. Therefore, how could he keep him concealed? In this way, Nandana glorified the actual truth of Mahaprabhu. Being pleased with Nandana's words, Mahaprabhu spent that night at his house discussing topics of Krishna. The next morning, Mahaprabhu developed a desire to bestow mercy on Sri Advaita Prabhu. He ordered Nanda and Acharya to bring Srivas Pandit alone. When Nanda and Acharya, on the order of the Lord, brought Srivas Pandit before the Lord, Srivas immediately began to cry out of love on seeing Mahaprabhu. The Lord then solaced Srivas and inquired from him about Advaita. Srivas informed Mahaprabhu about Advaita's distress due to separation and his fasting. He prayed to the Lord to give darshan to Advaitacharya and the other devotees who were overwhelmed due to separation from the Lord. After hearing the words of Srivas, the most merciful Gaurasundara went to Sri Advaitacharya. Finding Advaita in an unconscious state, the Lord considered himself a great offender. and began to repeatedly call Advaita. When Advaitacharya then humbly informed Gaurasundara about his own sinful mentality, pride and anger, and prayed to remain at the lotus feet of the Lord as a servant. Mahaprabhu described through a material example how the Supreme Lord always forgives the offenses committed by his servants, and how a person who has been punished by Krishna for his offense is eligible to attain the service of Krishna. After hearing the Lord's solacing words, Advaitacharya and the other devotees became jubilant. One day, Mahaprabhu expressed to the devotees a desire to enact the pastimes of Braja and ordered Sadashiva and Buddhimanta Khan to arrange various items such as conch shells, bodices, silk saris, and ornaments. He also designated which associate would wear which dress. When on the Lord's order, Buddhimanta Khan arranged the required costumes, the Lord became extremely pleased. In the course of expressing to the devotees his desire to dance as Lakshmi, the Lord said, "No one other than self-controlled persons are qualified to see this dance." Upon hearing these words from the Lord, all the devotees became distressed. When Advaita Prabhu and Srivas Pandit expressed their inability to see the dance because they were not in control of the senses, Mahaprabhu smiled and said that on that particular day, they would all be self-controlled yogis qualified to see the Lord's dancing. By the Lord's mercy, they would not be bewildered. To enact this pastime, Mahaprabhu and his associates assembled at the house of Chandrasekhar. Mother Sachi, Vishnu Priya, and the family members of the assembled Vaishnavas were all brought there to see the Lord dance as Lakshmi. When the devotees heard the Lord's instructions on how to dress, they became overwhelmed with ecstasy. Sri Advaita Acharya, as an expert jester, began dancing in various ways. Mukunda, as an expert singer, began to sing the glories of Krishna. And Haridas, as a constable with a stick in his hand, began to caution everyone to be prepared to see the Lord dance in the dress of Lakshmi. Srivas came on the stage dressed as Narada and indicated his actual identity by introducing himself as Narada, who travels throughout innumerable universes. He explained that he had gone to Vaikuntha to see Krishna, but found that everything there was vacant. When he then heard about Krishna's advent in Nadia, he left there and came to Navadvipa, where he entered the pastime of the Lord's dancing in the dress of Lakshmi. Right, so then you always have in the opening, you have the Vidushak will come out and he'll say so many things like this and that, and then, you know, so different people are taking different positions. And then from that, then they're establishing different aspects.
Now it seems that there is no repetition.
Rehearsal. It means in this case, it's because everybody knows the pastimes, and so then it's just a matter of taking that position and saying those things. You know, because you see, they're always talking about the pastimes, so they know the pastimes well. They know the moods and all that. So then by doing that, they can become very nicely absorbed in it. Means if you describe it, it'll grow nicely, but if you act it, then it goes even more.
Yes.
Like you heard with Nityananda and his childhood friends, they would also spontaneously enact all the pastimes.
Yeah, yes, like that. Because then that's half the fun. You know, you just do and this and that, and the kids just do, like I was coming by, we have this mango tree there. But, you know, it somehow or another grew in the drain that was around the school. You know? And so its roots are actually down lower. And so then at one point it decided to fill that in. And so we filled it in and put a road there. And so then the branches of the tree start just above the ground. And there's all these boys in the tree, little ones. That's what's happening, you know. So this one's Angad, this one's Nila, Nala, this one's Hanuman, this one's like this and that. And they're all there with big smiles on their face, just going for it. They just make it up as they go. You know, it's all in context of what they've read and everything. But that's just how it works. Mother Sachi and the wives of the Vaishnavas became absorbed in ecstatic love for Krishna as they watched Srivasa's wonderful dramatic enactment of pastimes. When Mother Sachi fell unconscious in ecstasy on seeing the attractive form of Shivas, all the assembled chaste ladies revived her by chanting Krishna's names in her ear. In this way, everyone inside and outside the house became overwhelmed with ecstatic love and forgot themselves. Meanwhile, inside the house, Vishwambhara dressed himself as Rukmini. Absorbed in her mood and considering himself the daughter of King Vidarbha, he recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam describing the contents of the letter Rukmini sent to Krishna. With tears in his eyes, he pretended to write a letter on the ground with his finger. Upon hearing this verse, the Vaishnavas began to cry and chant the name of Hari in ecstasy. After passing about 3 hours of drama in this way, Gadadhara and Brahmananda came on stage in the mood and dress of Braja damsels. Yes. Gadadhara then began to dance in ecstatic love as Rama, the goddess of fortune. Meanwhile, Mahaprabhu is the supreme goddess, and Nityananda, as an elderly grandmother, came on stage. According to their respective sentiments, some saw the Lord as Kamala, some saw him as Lakshmi, some saw him as Sita, and some saw him as Mahamaya. Even those who saw the Lord throughout their life were unable to recognize him. What to speak of others? Even Mother Sachi was unable to recognize the Lord. At that time, by the Lord's mercy, everyone felt as if he was their mother, so they become overwhelmed with ecstatic love. No one could understand what mood the Lord was dancing in, but after hearing his various statements, various persons felt he was dancing in the moon of Rukmini, Mahachandi, or Sri Radha. In this way, he taught everyone about the characteristics and glories of his various energies. When the Lord was dancing as the supreme goddess, Nityananda fell unconscious to the ground, and all the devotees began to cry loudly in ecstatic love. After a while, Vishwambhara took the deity of Gopal on his lap, and in the mood of Mahalakshmi, sat down on the throne.
The deity of Gopinath, is it? Yes.
What did I say?
Gopal.
Gopinath. Yes. Gopinath on his lap, and in the mood of Mahalakshmi, sat down on the throne. By the order of the Lord, the devotees offered him various prayers and begged for his merciful glance. When the Vaishnavas and their chaste wives noticed that dawn had broke, they could not maintain their composure out of lamentation. On seeing the Vaishnavas cry, the Lord, as the mother of the universe, began to breastfeed them. As a result, all their miseries were vanquished, and they became intoxicated with the mellows of ecstatic love. Job. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premananda ki.